Going back to the book of Ecclesiastes this morning and continuing our study there, we are up to chapter 2 and verse 12. Chapter 2 and verse 12, and I've sort of bitten off a rather large chunk this morning, so we'll move quickly through this. You recall that the author of the book, the writer of the book, is Solomon, King Solomon. The theme is to reveal the way of happiness and peace, or I could say the theme of this book is man's reasoning, how man approaches those things. He tells us what will not work, and there are a lot of things that won't bring contentment and happiness and peace and fulfillment. He tells us what will work. It's only one thing, found in the last chapter, chapter 12 and verse 13. The conclusions thus far, the world would tell us by means of entertainment and industry, the advertisement industry and media, that all that we need to make ourselves happy and content and to feel fulfilled is available to us right here under the sun. Solomon says that's a big lie. That's not the truth. You and I have probably lived long enough to say, I agree with Solomon. What we need for contentment is not found here on earth. Solomon has taught us that the pursuit of wisdom and knowledge is vain and it will not bring lasting fulfillment and peace. And the things that we're looking for, happiness, the pursuit of pleasure, to have the abundance of things is vain and it will result in no lasting happiness, no contentment, none of those things we're looking for. So Solomon adds here in chapter 2 and verse 12, and I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. We saw that last week, actually. For what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath already been done, he answers. So King Solomon is telling us again that he could afford to conduct these experiments in life in a way that cannot be surpassed. No one after him would be able to be more thorough than he has been. With his God-given wisdom and his wealth of a king, he could do it like no other. So his point is, you don't need to waste your time on any experiments of your own. He already did it for you, and here's the result. It's right here in this book for us, and so read it. Solomon already did it, and all we have to do is believe what he wrote. But if Solomon were here this morning, even to what we have discovered thus far in the book of Ecclesiastes, I would have some questions for him, wouldn't you? If the wise man and the fool end up in the same place with the same thing, is there any advantage to walking in wisdom? We could ask him, if the laborer and the lazy, if they end up in the same place with the same reward in this life, is there any advantage to working? Those would be good questions based upon the things that he has said. Unless that we judge him crazy, Solomon would, I believe, well, I know because in the next verses he does concede a bit to our understanding of the answer to those questions. In spite of the fact that all is vanity and vexation of spirits, there certainly is a good, better, and best. Solomon would concede to that. There is a best way. Even though all is vanity, under the umbrella of all is vanity and vexation of spirit, there is a best path to walk, under that umbrella, if you will. His first concession is found in verse 13, chapter 2 and verse 13. Solomon concedes that though all is vanity, wisdom is better than folly. Listen to him in verse 13. Then I saw the wisdom that excelleth folly as far as light excelleth darkness. Verse 14, the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. Even in a world where all is vanity, the way of wisdom is better than the way of folly, he says. It's all vanity, but wisdom's the best if you're looking for the best. The difference between wisdom and folly are as obvious as the difference between light and darkness, he says. Walking in wisdom is like walking in the light. At least you can see where you're going. At least you have understanding of what's happening. But to walk through life without wisdom is like bouncing off of things in the darkness. It just makes no sense to do that. Wisdom's definitely the better path, he says. And Solomon wrote a whole book on this thesis, didn't he? In the Proverbs chapter 2, you might want to look there. I'll give you a second to turn over. He writes about this that he has just said, that wisdom is the best path. This is a book in which he had inserted God back into the equation himself, okay? Because there was a time in Solomon's life to where he had a more intimate personal relationship, a better understanding of the Lord. And he says here in Proverbs 2 and verse 1, he says, "My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom," that's our topic, "and apply thine heart to understanding, yea, if thou criest after knowledge and lifteth up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her as silver and searcheth for her as for hidden treasure, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly." But this does not detract from what he's saying in Ecclesiastes, okay? Let's go back to Ecclesiastes. I stopped in the middle of verse 14 where he continues, I myself perceive also that one event happeneth to them all. This is the same man, okay? "One event happeneth to them all. Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even unto me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in mine heart that this also is vanity. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever. Seeing that which now is, in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As the fool," he says. "Therefore I hated life, because the work that I wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit." He comes to that conclusion. Wise is better, but it's still all vain, he says. The wise and the fool, he says here, will both meet their appointment with death. They will both be forgotten in a couple of generations. Nobody will ever mention their name again. Wisdom, which he already concedes is better than folly, had only revealed that every pursuit in life was like chasing the wind. But we can say, but at least wisdom revealed that to him. At least he could see where he was going. To reflect on these truths is enough to make one hate life, and so he did, verse 17. But verse 18, it gets even worse. He says, "Yea, I hated all my labors which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun." Are you following his meaning here? This is also vanity, he said. So the saddest day in a rich man's life is when he has to leave all of his riches. And when he leaves them, somebody else will take over those riches. And the accomplishments, the investments, the accumulation of assets of this wise man might be left to a fool. And Solomon says, "Oh, woe is me. All is vanity and vexation of spirit," he says. Such was the case with Solomon. Who was his son? Rehoboam. Do you remember Rehoboam? Led the people into idolatry, squandered his father's riches, Rehoboam squandered away the whole kingdom listening to his young comrades rather than to his wise older counselors. The shields that were in the temple went to pay off Egypt when they invaded Judah. He just squandered the Lord's riches and the riches of the kingdom. So Solomon repeats himself in verse 20. He's really into this. Therefore, I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labors which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity. Yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and great evil. For what hath man of all his labors and of the vexation of his heart wherein he hath labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows and his travail grief. Yea, his heart taketh not rest in night. This is also vanity, he said. As he explains it, can't you relate? He is spot on as far as looking at life without God, isn't he? It's all vain. There is nothing of any value, certainly not of any eternal value, that we can do in this life if this is it, if the human perspective and the horizontal plane is all that there is. So this is Solomon's vision or his version of, I never saw a hearse pulling a U-Haul. You can't take it with you, he says. And in verse 23 that I just read, the hardworking man's days are filled with labor, his nights are filled with sleeplessness. He lays awake concerned about tomorrow's labors. He sleeps and his dreams are plagued with the cares of his business and the responsibilities of life. That's it. That's the way it is. The wise man and the fool, in summary, they both end up in the grave. In two generations, they're forgotten. The wise man works hard to provide for his family, to be an upstanding citizen, and the fool does nothing. He sits on his hands and squanders his little. In the end, the wise man dies and the fool inherits what he's worked for. It has become the moral obligation in our day, 2018, that parents work hard so that they can leave an inheritance to their children. Vanity of vanity, Solomon says, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. And parents leave big sums of money to their children and they ruin their children by their inheritance. They do. The scripture says that the real inheritance that our children should receive from us is in the spiritual realm. Martin Luther, who we praise even in our fundamental circles, though he was not at all a fundamentalist, he was very off base and wrong in much of his doctrine. But he did understand this. He said, Lord God, I thank you because you have been pleased to make me a poor and indigent man upon earth. I have neither house nor land nor money to leave behind me. You have given me a wife and children whom I now restore to you. Lord, nourish, teach, and preserve them as you have me. He thanked God for his poverty. And he prayed that the Lord might be as real to his family as he had been to him. He understood. So why then should we bother with wisdom and labor that it insists upon? If you're going to be wise, you'll want to work. In terms of life on earth, all is vanity, but still, the way of wisdom is best alternative, he says. Let's insert the Lord back into the equation here for Solomon. Solomon's talking about earthly endeavors and possessions, but there's much more to life than earthly possessions, isn't there? And Paul reminds us that our earthly path can produce eternal treasures. We can lay up for ourselves treasures in heaven rather than on earth. When he says in 1 Corinthians 15:58, Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Your labor is not in vain in the Lord. I used to know who said this: only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. That's true. But we can do a lot for Christ. We can spend ourselves for the Lord. Quite honestly, I'm ashamed of the part of my life that was wasted. A large part of my life was wasted with the wrong motives, with the wrong attitudes. God forgive me. Boy, I want to finish strong though. I want to do what I do now for the glory of God, not my own. And I struggle with that. Do you? It's hard, isn't it? God help us to lay up for ourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust don't corrupt and thieves can't break through and steal. So he's made this one concession. Wisdom is better than folly. All is vanity and vexation of spirit, but you got to go somewhere. So this is a better path than that one. Wisdom. And he's right. He's right. Wisdom is a better path than folly. And any path is better if God is a part of the equation. He doesn't say that, but we know it, don't we? Second concession, verse 24, Solomon concedes that though all is vanity, the pleasures afforded us by our labor is better than wasting our time sitting on our hands doing nothing. Solomon, if everybody ends up in the same place, if the rich man's reward will be given to the fool in the end, if all go to ground and turn to dirt, why labor? Why labor? And Solomon says, all is vanity, but the pleasures afforded us by our labor are certainly better than what is experienced by those lazy individuals who just sit on their hands and do nothing. Verse 24, there is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God. Who is God to Solomon at this point as he writes? He's that creator out there, the creator God somewhere out there. He's not the personal, intimate, covenant-keeping God that would be expressed in the name Jehovah. He's referring to God as Elohim, the creator God out there. Okay? But he says here in verse 24, in the sea of vanity that we call life, God has designed that we enjoy the fruit of our labor. You build a house, you can enjoy living in it. You plant fruit trees, you can enjoy eating the fruit. You can enjoy your computer, your car, or whatever. You know, those things are here. You've worked hard for them, and Solomon says it's good that you're able to enjoy those things. Duh, yeah. Right? Verse 25, for who can eat or who else can hasten hereunto more than I? He said, I can speak this from experience. Solomon says here again that his position as king, as the wisest man on the face of the earth, made it possible for him to enjoy the pleasures of life perhaps more than others. And he reminds us again that there is no need to test this. You can't up him one. You're not going to be able to test it more than Solomon was able. And so just take his word for it, he says. Well, Solomon, okay, so labor's better than lazy. That's what he's saying. 24 and 25, labor is better than lazy. But here's how he observed, verse 26. For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight, wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner he giveth travail, to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. Now, that's a little bit harder for me to understand. Why is that vanity, Solomon? Why is that vexation of spirit? Solomon has observed, crime does not pay. Sin does not pay. It just works out better if you behave yourself. It is because of God's design that we who are good in His sight have the capacity to enjoy the things that He gives us, the blessings in this earthly life. To those that please Him, He gives wisdom and knowledge and joy. To the sinner, He gives burden and hard work to afford pleasure, but He takes it away and He gives it to the person who's doing the right thing. God blesses those who walk with Him and walk in the light, and God allows those who live in the darkness to live with the consequences of their sin. We can observe that as well, just as Solomon did. John D. Rockefeller, does that mean anything to you? Very rich man of the past. He had an income, I read, of about $1 million a week. $1 million a week. Boy, what I could do with $1 million a week. His biography said that his doctors only allowed him a few cents worth of food a day. Now less than 100 pounds, it is written, this is a quote, in weight, he sampled everything at breakfast, a drop of coffee, a spoonful of cereal, a fork of egg, and a bit of chop the size of a pea. He weighed less than 100 pounds. He was the richest man in the world, but he didn't have the ability to enjoy it. That's what Solomon saw. God blesses those with the ability to enjoy what wisdom and knowledge and all of these things bring. If you'll walk in the light, if you'll walk in wisdom. So Solomon says, based upon what he saw, it's better to be laboring and accomplishing something than it is to be lazy. Let me sort of summarize this little point. In a world where all is vanity, it's still easy to see that enjoying the fruits of your labors is better than having nothing. You add God into the mix and it becomes apparent that the things that we have are from His hand. He blesses those who walk in wisdom. And He judges the sinner and allows him to live with the consequences of his sin. That's what Solomon saw. And so he concedes, better get a job than sit at home and be lazy. Thirdly, let me back up a little bit. In spite of the fact that every path leads to vanity and vexation of spirit, he says, it's still better to have a job than it is to be lazy. Under the umbrella of all is vanity. Why is that? Why is all vanity? Because God's not in the equation. Okay. Now we go to the third concession. Solomon concedes, though all is vanity and affords no lasting change and contentment, there is a time, there is a season for all the elements of life, and some of them are to be enjoyed. Now here's that part that everybody likes to quote little portions of. There's a time for this and a time for that. Well, we'll read them. There are 14 pairs. Verse 1, chapter 3, to everything there is a season, and a time for every purpose under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up that which was planted or is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. All of those. There are 28 things that there is a time for. 14 positives and 14 negatives. 14 minus 14 is zero. Vanity, vexation of spirit. You put it all together, what good is it? It all equals nothing. That's his point. They're pairs that cancel each other out. He's building a case for all his vanity, vexation of spirit. So he asks in verse 9, chapter 3, what profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? And you might assume that he's looking for the answer, none. But he answers his own question by saying in verse 10, I have seen the travail which God hath given to sons of men to be exercised of it. Isn't this odd language? I've seen the travail that God gives. That's strange to me, isn't it, you? But remember, God is that creator God out there, and he's looking at life from human eyes. And we say when we read verse 10, what is this? Solomon, are you feeling okay? You're not being yourself here. God has given to the sons of man to exercise. He hath made, verse 11, he hath made everything beautiful in his time. Sort of sounds like he's changing his mind or a little or something. Solomon concedes that even in this vain world, one can see the design and the sovereign plan of God. You can see that. The Creator God out there. Verse 11, the latter part of the verse says, also he has set the world. That didn't make any sense to me, so I looked up the word world, a long expanse of time. You could put the word eternity in their hearts, in the hearts of men, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. So God created man to be mindful of eternity. Even though he can't fully understand, he can't comprehend what he sees in this life. There's way beyond that. There's an expanse in that way, and God was before me, and there's an expanse that way, and God is after me too. There's no way I can comprehend that. There's no way I can even comprehend this, what I have in my own life. He can't even comprehend the ways and the works of the Lord in this age, much less beyond, he says. Hang in there, verse 12. I know that there is no good in them. But for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labors, it is the gift of God. The only good, he says, that's received out of these labors of life is to enjoy for a season. There's a time for the good part, the part we would embrace. Enjoy those parts, he's saying, because this design is from God. This is the way that it is. There's a time to be happy. There's a time to be sad. Enjoy the happy, he says. There's a time to live and a time to die. Enjoy the live, he says. This is just how God has ordained it. This is how it is, he's recognized. So this is Solomon's version of every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Everything that's good, just enjoy it. It's that part of life that God ordained that we might enjoy. Verse 14, I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it or added to it, nor anything taken from it, and God doeth it, that men should fear before him. That which hath been is now, and that which is to be hath already been, and God requireth that which is past. So Solomon sees this cycle. History keeps repeating itself, he's saying. It does repeat itself. If you study history, you'll see that. The things that we do is because we've forgotten the lessons of the past, and we have to learn it all over again, go through the motions again. So Solomon recognizes that last phrase, and God requireth that which is past. There's an old commentator, a man whose name is Francis Franco Delitzsch, Kylan Delitzsch, Old Testament commentary, very classic, very a more critical type commentary. He says this: the government of God does not change. His creative as well as his moral ordering of the world produces with the same law that same phenomena. His government remains always and brings up again that which hath been. That's how he describes that last phrase. Requires a little thought, but it does make sense when you consider what the words mean. Let me summarize this little section here. In a world where all is vanity, life is made up of ceaseless cycles, in which man can, at best, enjoy the labors of his own hands. As you go through the cycles, there's going to be good and bad. Enjoy the good, he says. Now let me add God to the mix. Because he's not added God to the mix here. Let me add God to the mix. And we see those cycles contain seasons of joy. They're directed from the very hand of God. But he tells us as well to count it all joy when we fall into various trials in the New Testament, right? In the book of James. We know that as God sort of paints the picture of our life, that sometimes he takes a big wide brush and he dips it into dark colors and he just makes a swath across and it seems like he ruins the picture. Have you ever watched anybody paint a picture like this? And they do it on purpose. They know you're looking over their shoulder, and their crowd, their gazers go, "Oh, he messed it up." It may be the picture of a mountain, a snow-capped mountain with water coming down to the front and a beautiful picture with vegetation around, and then he puts this black swath up through there. And then he starts to add various shades of gray and he makes it a tree trunk, and then he puts some branches out from the tree trunk, and before he's finished you go, "Ah." Because you're looking through the branches of this tree that's up close into this beautiful, beautiful scenery behind it. And it's the Garden of Eden in our minds. Wow. You seen it? When you add God in the mix, you see, we can see even purpose in the dark strokes. Solomon's not seeing that as he reads this, or as he writes this. Lastly, a concession from Solomon, verse 16. Solomon concedes, though all is vain in terms of our earthly existence, in light of the judgment to come, everybody's going to stand before God in judgment. In light of the judgment to come, it's good to enjoy what comes into your hand now, he says. Verse 16, and moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment. That wickedness was there. And the place of righteousness, that iniquity was there. I said in mine heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time there for every purpose and every work. This is an interesting little portion here. In places of judgment, let's say down to the courthouse, the Bangor courthouse. Never been in there. Hope I never have to go into courthouse. But in the courthouse, there's a judge sitting on the bench. There's a jury over here at the side. And they're trying somebody for some heinous crime that has been committed. And this person, let's say he's guilty. There's wickedness with him. And Solomon said, I looked up to the bench and there the judge sits and there's wickedness with him too. In the places where justice and righteousness are conducted, there's wickedness there. All of the officers gathered around, all of the jurors, there are things in their life that are wicked too, Solomon said. So they're all guilty. Take them all to court and they will stand in judgment before God someday. And God will look at them and they're guilty. All of them are wicked. That's what Solomon's saying. They're all wicked. On the side of the criminal, you'll find wickedness, but on both sides, the judge, the officers, the jury, there's iniquity there under the sun, he says. The place where righteous judgment should be rendered, there's still wickedness. Oh. You hear his frustration with life? He says there's coming a day, though he didn't know when exactly, a day of judgment in which God will judge all men righteously. And since both the judge and the wicked, the jury and the wicked, the officers and the wicked, they're all the same, Solomon assumes that when God judges them, it'll all be the same. They'll all be in the same lot. He says in verse 18, I said in mine heart concerning the estate of the sons of men, that God mightest manifest them, and that they might see that they themselves are beasts. All of you, he says. For that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beasts. Even one thing befalleth them, as the death, as the one dieth, so dieth the other. Yea, they have all one breath, so that a man hath no preeminence over the beast. There's nothing special about mankind. For all is vanity. All go into one place. All are of the dust, and all return or turn to the dust again. All men, so-called righteous, so-called wicked, will all die and turn to dirt. As far as natural man can tell, there's no difference between the soul and the spirit of a man and the soul and spirit of an animal, a beast, he says. All will die and return to dirt. Verse 21, who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward? In other words, who's seen that? You ever see any spirit go up? You ever see any spirit go down? Nope. Who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward and the spirit of the beast that goeth down to the earth? Wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion. That's it. For who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? You follow his reasoning? Did you read that? Kind of depressing, isn't it? Somebody says, well, I believe in the afterlife. Have you ever seen it? Solomon says, no. Do you ever see a soul go up? Do you ever see a soul go down? No. So this is Solomon's version of eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Live it up. You only go around once in life, the beer commercial used to say. Grab all the gusto you can. Get every bit of the good out of it you can, because this is it. Though all is vanity, since life ends in the grave, we might as well enjoy what we can. That's a pessimistic view of life. But you take God out of the life of an individual, and you might start to understand why people do what they do out here. They don't believe in God. What's there to live for? We're like animals. Add God to the mix, and life becomes a human person, becomes a mortal, an immortal soul that will live on forever in the presence of God. And life on earth is an opportunity for him to lay up treasures in heaven. Changes everything when you put God back in the mix. Let me just recap what we've learned this morning. Though all is vanity in terms of earthly existence, all is vexation of spirit, Solomon concedes that there is a good, better, and best. The best path to walk is the path of wisdom. Wisdom is better than just being a fool. The pleasures afforded us by our labor is better than wasting our time and having nothing. He said there's a time and a season for all the elements of life, and some of them are for us to enjoy, and that's by design of God. There's a time for this and a time for that. A time for this and a time for that. In light of the judgment that's coming, where we'll all stand before God and be guilty, we'll be buried and turned to dirt, you might as well enjoy life now. Even if you don't believe in God, Solomon says. No, I guess Solomon didn't say it, but I say. Even if you don't believe in God, Solomon is saying that there is a best way to go through life. I've heard of people trying to witness with others, and they say, you know, if I'm right and you're wrong, what do you have to lose? And the answer is everything. If I'm right, you're going to die without Christ and spend eternity in hell, and you're going to live without God on this earth today. If you're right and I'm wrong, what do I have to lose? Nothing. I'm enjoying life now. I'm looking to God, though you think it's a lie. I'm looking to God and I'm enjoying a relationship with Him. It's a figment of my imagination, you say, but it makes me thrilled to know God. I know it's not a figment of my imagination. If you're right and I'm wrong, I have nothing to lose. I'm living the good life. I'm living a life of contentment and purpose and fulfillment, and you're living a life of emptiness and vanity. Even if there were no God, even if there were no Jesus Christ, I'd still want to do it this way. Solomon eventually came around to that understanding, though he's on the other side of the cross. Remember, he's before the gospel. He said, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, keep His commandments. This is the whole duty of man. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. All the rest will be added to you. Let me repeat that quote that I have used several times. I had asked for all things that I might enjoy life. I was given life, spiritual life, that I might enjoy all things. That's a tremendous, powerful quote, I think. I pray that the Lord will help this not to become a bore to you as we continue. If you start to look bored, I'm just going to warn you, I'll quit. We'll go to something else. Because this is hard, isn't it? It's hard to hear this perspective of life. But there's more. There's lots more. And we'll continue, Lord willing, next week. Let's bow for a word of prayer. Father, I thank You for the opportunity to share these thoughts. I pray that You would bless them to our hearts. Help us to learn what You have for us, Lord, out of this book, from Your Word, inspired by Your Spirit. We might see what You have for us. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.